WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Our archive edition today features actors and directors who have made biblical-era epics.
Slaves you were, and slaves you remain. But the terrible penalty of crucifixion has been set aside on the single condition that you identify the body or the living person of the slave called Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.
Kirk Douglas ended up on the cross in the 1960 epic Spartacus. He starred as the leader of a slave rebellion in ancient Rome. Spartacus is one of the biggest of the big historical spectacles, with big stars, Kirk Douglas, Tony Curtis, Charles Laughton, Laurence Olivier, and a cast of thousands. The battle scenes required 5,000 uniforms and 7 tons of custom-made armor. Spartacus even had an epic running time, about 3 hours. I spoke to Kirk Douglas in 1988. He didn't just star in Spartacus, he produced it. In his autobiography, he wrote that after starring in The Vikings, he didn't want to be in another epic. So I asked him why he made Spartacus.
I didn't want to make an epic, and one of the first things I said to my group, I said, look, if we do this picture Spartacus, let's make it as if it were a small picture. And to me, if you look at Spartacus again, you will find that the characters dominate the background. Most pictures, Ben-Hur and all that, the background is so enormous. But in Spartacus, Olivier, Laughton, Ustinov, Gene Simmons, the characters are stronger than the background, and that's what I try to do. In spite of the fact that it was an epic picture, I wanted the characters to be, for them to be larger than life.
You mentioned the characters and some of the actors. You ended up casting Gene Simmons in the role of Spartacus's lover and the woman who he has a baby with. And initially you didn't want to cast her because she's British, and you thought that that would ruin the linguistic pattern of the movie, and I'd love for you to explain what you meant by that.
Well, I have a very simple... For example, when I did The Vikings, all the Vikings are Americans. We have a rougher pattern of speech. The English have a more elegant pattern of speech, so that makes it work. In Spartacus, you'll notice that all the aristocratic Romans are English.
That's right. They're great, the slaves, great stage actors. Great British
right.
stage actors.
The slaves, like myself, were Americans.
Not only that, ethnic, right? Jewish, Italian. You, Jewish. Tony Curtis, Italian. No, Tony Curtis is Jewish too, actually, isn't
that's
he?
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I always forget that.
But it doesn't matter. You see, it's just that Americans have a rougher speech pattern. For example, I often think that Shakespeare very often is better played in when it's done in the United States, because those beautiful lines take on a rougher quality that I think Shakespeare really intended.
So the slaves have the rough quality, and that's the Romans right. have the more genteel, educated, refined
exactly.
sound.
Exactly. Of course.
Is this intentional? Is this standard, or is this just something you wanted to do? Do you think it's pretty standard in epics of that period to cast that way?
I don't know. I never thought of it that way. It was just, you know,
okay.
my way of looking at the picture.
Since we're talking about Spartacus, let me play a clip from the movie. And this is toward the end of the first half of the film. Remember, this movie had an intermission. And Spartacus and many other slaves have escaped from slavery. And after they've escaped, many of the slaves are just drinking wine. They're having Romans fight each other as if the Romans were slaves. And Spartacus is saying, what are you doing with your lives? You should be doing something more productive. And he suggests that they actually fight the Roman Empire.
What are we, Crixus? What are we becoming, Romans? Have we learned nothing? What's happening to us? We look for wine when we should be hunting bread.
When you've got wine, you don't need bread.
Can't just be a gang of drunken raiders.
What else can we be?
Gladiators. an army of gladiators. There's never been an army like that. One gladiator's worth any two Roman soldiers that ever lived.
We beat the Roman guards here, but a Roman army's a different thing. They fight different than we do, too.
We can beat anything they send against us if we really want to.
It takes a big army for that, Spartacus.
We'll have a big army. Once we're on the march, we'll free every slave in every town and village. Can anybody get a bigger army than that?
That's right. Once we cross the Alps, we're safe.
Nobody can cross the Alps. Every pass is defended by its own legion.
There's only one way to get out of this country.
The sea.
What good is the sea if you have no ships?
The Cilician pirates have ships. They're at war with Rome. Every Roman galley that sails out of Brundusium pays tribute to them.
They've got the biggest fleet in the world. I was a galley slave with them. Give them enough gold and they'll take you anywhere.
We haven't got enough gold.
Take every Roman we capture and warm his back a little. We'll have gold all right.
Spartacus is right. Let's hire these pirates and march straight to Brundusium.
Well, they get their army, and you, as Spartacus, lead them against the Roman army. I think the battle scene in Spartacus where the slave army and the Roman army fight is one of the most interestingly choreographed movie battle scenes. The slaves are massed in almost a checkerboard foundation formation. There are people in the slave and the Roman army as far as you can see. It is this huge vista of people. I'm wondering what your most vivid memory of being in the middle of all of that is.
Well, you see, all of that was historically accurate. We studied how Romans fought, you know, and how they arranged their armies. And, of course, that was a scene. We shot the entire picture in the United States except for those scenes, which we shot in Spain, because you needed so many people, and we used lots of Spanish soldiers. The battle scenes were all shot in Spain because it needed thousands of people.
There is a scene at the end that is a mass crucifixion, and you're one of the many actors on the cross at the end of the movie. And I'd really like to know how you were attached to the cross so that you could hang there without really hurting yourself.
Well, as a matter of fact, playing that scene, we learned an awful lot about crucifixion. We learned that it would be impossible to be crucified the way very often you see a crucifixion. You know, the body would sag right down. But to make our scenes effective, it was very easy. Every cross had a bicycle seat that just kept the body up high enough so that you wouldn't be sagging down in a very unattractive position.
Kirk Douglas recorded in 1988. Tony Curtis on his censored scene from Spartacus after this break. This is Fresh Air. A restored version of Spartacus was released in 1991. It included a previously censored scene featuring Tony Curtis and Laurence Olivier. In a 1991 interview, Tony Curtis told me about making that scene. Laurence Olivier played the head of the Roman army. Tony Curtis played Olivier's sensitive slave boy who joins the slave uprising and becomes like a son to Spartacus. In this scene, Curtis is attending to Olivier in the bath. Curtis gives his master a robe, then Olivier talks about the splendor of Rome.
There, boy, is Rome. The might, the majesty, the terror of Rome. There is the power that bestrides the known world like a colossus. No man can withstand Rome. No nation can withstand her. How much less a boy? There's only one way to deal with Rome, Antoninus. You must serve her. You must abase yourself before her. You must grovel at her feet. You must love her. Isn't that so, Antoninus?
Well, you get the point there. Olivier is suggesting that Curtis should not only give in to the power of Rome, but to the sexual power of his master. It's very metaphoric. The whole thing is so...
Well, he doesn't come out and say, I want to stick it to you, dear. I mean, you know, he talks about snails and oysters. It's a clever way of... or they think it's an artistic way of doing it. I would have much preferred the scene were a little more blatant in its approach because it would have been a lot more logical and perhaps a lot more realistic. But somebody thought it would be kind of fanciful to talk of fish. I really don't know why.
Well, I actually have the script from that scene in front of me, so let me read some of it. I won't pretend like I'm you or Olivier.
Well, please.
But Crassus, played by Olivier, asks you a bunch of questions. He asks you, do you steal, Antoninus? And you say, no, master. And he says, do you lie? And you say, no, master. And he says, have you ever dishonored the gods? And you say, no. He says, do you refrain from these vices out of respect for the moral virtues? And you say, yes. Then he asks you if you eat oysters and if you eat snails. And you say, yeah, that you eat oysters, but you don't eat snails. And he asks you if you consider the eating of oysters to be moral and the eating of snails to be immoral and so on. And then he confesses that he eats both.
Yes.
It's kind of like swinging both ways type subtext here. So did you and Olivier really talk through the scene before you did it? You know,
absolutely not. There's nothing to talk through. There I am in a bikini.
Yeah, you're wearing your bathing trunks.
Standing over him while he sits in a bikini in a tub. I mean, it doesn't really take a lot of internal dialogue to describe or even know what's going on.
Was there a big fight with the censors over the scene?
No, there wasn't. I don't think the studio had any plans to really put it in, you know?
Well, whose idea was it to put it in?
Well, it had to go in. Larry, Olivier, and I wouldn't have done the other scenes had not that scene been shot. See, it was written in the script, and before the picture was made, they decided that it's not going to end up in the movie. So we shot that scene, but only on the protest. Larry and I told the production department and the producer of the film that we would not be interested in doing the second scene unless we had that first scene. And we wouldn't do that first scene unless we had the scene before it where he sees me in a lineup and says to me, your name? You will attend to me. All of those were implicit in this kind of string of the relationship between Crassus and Antoninus. That's what you call complete movie making. It was very important. And for them to cut that scene out hurt that whole center of the film, and I feel it hurt the movie completely because it kind of, you know, washed it down to nothing. So you weren't quite sure what that meant.
So did either of you take the lead in objecting to the scene being cut or in insisting that
No, we both knew what the relationship between Crassus and Antoninus was, and we both insisted that the scenes had to be done the way the script was written. So we got them to shoot that scene, but they never recorded the sound. You know, they discarded the sound because they knew that it would probably never be in the film. Larry and I hoped it would be, and when we saw the final cut and realized they had cut it, we knew that, you know, it was hurting the performances, but there was nothing we could do about it. And here we are 30-some-odd years later, and it's back in the movie. And I'm sure if Larry were alive, he'd really be happy to know that.
Now, the scene that we're talking about had no sound. So that means that you had to dub in the sound when they decided to restore it.
Yes.
And Olivier is no longer with us. How did you...
Well, I did Olivier, and they got somebody else to do me.
Right.
They got Anthony Hopkins to do Olivier.
Uh-huh. But you, even for you doing yourself, I mean, it wasn't anybody standing in for you, but still a voice changes in...
Well, all you do is kick it up a little bit higher.
Is that what you did?
Well, that's what I did. I'm doing it now.
Does it sound convincing?
Well, it's convincing to me.
Do you remember any of the logistical problems in the big battle scene?
Yes, there was a scene that was shot in Death Valley, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember now the exact location, where down in the valley were thousands of soldiers and men lined up, and the camera panned up and came up a hill. And as it came up a hill, it disclosed, I think, Spartacus on the horse. And just as that camera came there, the horse bolted and took Kirk off in a big steam of sand and dirt, and was never seen again in that shot. So we had to go do it again. It was a complicated scene, and that horse just would not, you know, pay attention to it. Because after all of the action, the camera would slowly pan and disclose that horse. So it had those kind of problems, you know. Charlie McGraw, an actor who was doing a scene with Kirk Douglas, and he was the, what would you call it, the guy that ran the gladiator school. He and Spartacus, when they revolt, had a fight. And in the struggle, Kirk pushed his head, Charles McGraw's head, onto the edge of the barrel and split his eye open. You can see it in the movie, just blood gushing out. So that held up the shooting for a long time.
Oh, you mean he really hurt him accidentally?
Yes. So there were always accidents like that. I had hurt my tendon on the film, and at one point I just couldn't walk, so they gave me a cast, and I tried to, you know, maneuver through that, which worked all right. Let's see what else. There were a number of these things, a lot of horses falling down with people on it, people getting broken arms. But, you know, that's the nature of the profession, and we were all kind of prepared for it. We rather liked the adventure of it and the danger of it, you know. It all adds to the making of a movie.
Tony Curtis recorded in 1991. Here's Bill Evans' recording of the love theme from Spartacus. This is Fresh Air.